The following episode of FOFOP is classified MA. It contains some coarse language, some nudity, drug references, a sex scene, time travel, terrible Batman impersonations, a Charlie Clausen pronounced Clausen-shaped hole, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that the program is not suitable for persons under the age of 15, and minors must be accompanied by an adult guardian or priest. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson, and joining me, okay, well, one of these people has been on the podcast before, but they've never been on as a team, and one of them has not been on before. That probably did not need to be in the intro, but here we go. It is the guys from the Little Dum Dum Club podcast, which is one of my favourite podcasts on the whole wide world wide web. It is Carl Chandler and Tommy Daslow.
Hey.
Welcome.
Yay. Hey,
when you said last night come and do the podcast, I thought you meant philosophy. I thought we were coming here to talk about the meaning of life.
Okay, great. This is what I asked people on that podcast then. Seeing that you've offered that up, mate. What is your personal philosophy? Do you have one?
What's the meaning of life?
Yeah.
I think the meaning of life is a sweet 69er.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's the ultimate yin and yang. It's the real personification.
Fuck, it's a big one asking you the meaning of life. When are you going to start yours?
I mean, you're a guy who's living bonus life now because you're meant to be dead.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for you, you can have that perspective, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you're right.
Should we explain that at all?
No. Not at all.
This is like...
We'll stab Tommy on the way in here, and so now that's his bonus life.
This is like the podcasting shared universe where you get more out of this if you've listened to our thing before and you know my whole backstory.
Yeah, you've got to understand. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Our podcast is Civil War. And this is homecoming.
You're like, hang on, who's this guy? Who's this Spider-Man that they're talking about? Why is he young now? I actually think, I know you were joking a bit, but I like the yin and yang of the dinner for two, the 69.
It
does actually feel
like
it's like a connected,
yeah.
both giving pleasure to each other.
It's like the universe. You get out what you put
fuck.
In. Yeah.
That's ruined me. Next time I see a yin and yang tattoo on someone, I'm going to get a massive heart on.
Yeah. You're just like, yin is really going down on yang right now. Yin and yang. The whole time, the person who first came up with that has gone, nah, I was just drawing a 69er.
Yeah.
I don't know what you guys have been turning it into this spiritual sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, a friend of ours who's on our show a bit, Nick Kappa, who's a very funny Melbourne comedian, has a bit at the moment where he talks about 69ing, and his lead into it is going, talking about how much he hates the 69er and how boring it is. And you feel everyone in the room going, what?
Yeah. Like I confronted him the other day.
Yeah, right,
I pulled him aside. He goes, and I go, you know how your setup is? How boring are 69ers? I go, no one thinks that at all. And he goes, oh, I've been noticing for the last 6 months people don't really get that bit. Well, it's just a factual error. What are you talking about?
I mean, if anything, if you're going to go like the problem with the 69er, it's that too much is going on.
Yeah,
concentrating on both ends.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can get distracted from one of the jobs that you're meant to be doing.
I think clearly Kappa has never had a 69.
Yeah.
Is there any chance he doesn't know what it is?
Yeah. I love that in stand-up where someone has like a belief that's exclusive to them, but they've just never tested it out in the world. So they think it's universal. Like watching people go, you know how we all think this, and seeing a room full of people go, what are you talking about, mate?
Yeah. You know how traffic lights are grey? Oh, no, you're just colourblind, buddy.
Yeah, mate, sorry to break this to you, mate. You can't see colours.
Yeah.
It is one of these things because in comedy, you also don't need to do that generalised, hey, everyone thinks this.
Yeah.
I actually think it's really interesting to see someone who goes, I am bored by 69ers.
Right.
You know, everybody else thinks 69ers are exciting, but here's why I'm bored by them. You're like, oh, great, this tells me something about you.
Yeah, sure.
But when you kind of are going, hey, everyone hates 69ers, right? And you're like, no, I don't reckon they do.
But then he goes on to talk about having a 69er in the war while he's shooting people. And it's like, well, that's not boring either. Like, all you're saying about 69ing sounds amazing.
Yeah, and I like that, because that's what the bit is. And it's like, you don't need this big setup of talking talking about them being boring, like to just get into that. Just get into that.
Who knew you were going to download an episode of Will Anderson's podcast that's say behind the curtain of Nick Capper's comedy? Wow.
I mean, Capper's never been on the podcast.
Exactly.
So he's really the Ant-Man in this Civil War universe.
And in comedy, in general.
This is like that Song Exploder podcast, except the actual band hasn't shown up. We're just another band talking about a song that they like.
What about you, Carl Chandler? If you were going to say, what's your meaning of life now that Daslo's dropped his 69 yin and yang bomb on us? I need some balance here.
Because you don't think about this stuff at all. You're very much like not a, like a, like a, you know, spiritual or any kind of that kind of thinking, are you?
No, I don't think so.
Do you think about death?
I do now. I've started thinking about it as I've gotten older. Definitely. I've started going, the last 6 months I've started going to bed and closing my eyes going, this is what it's going to be. This is it. Which is really weird.
Coincide with you getting engaged?
No.
So you're now
I go to bed with my fingers crossed now.
So you're now thinking of sleep as like the warm-up to the big event. You're in training.
It's like stretching.
That's not bad.
Stretching for death.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
You've been doing some prep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's essentially like meditating and kind of visualizing, you know, say how a gig might go.
Yeah.
If you got a gig that night, you're just going, well, this is how I'll lay in my coffin.
Yeah, no.
My eyes will be shut.
It's literally doing that thing, especially if you're in comedy and you're in this sort of thing where you start, you know, you kind of vaguely think everything's about you and you're going, fuck, are things going to go on without me? Like, is there a chance this is the Truman Show and everything's relying on me? Is everything going to stop if I'm not here anymore? And it's not, I don't think that 100%, but I think it a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, some aspects of the Melbourne comedy scene had probably slowed down for a few weeks.
Until
someone else took over your gig.
Yeah.
That would be the most depressing thing from the afterlife, you watching and going, oh, fuck, the gigs all run fine without me.
Yeah. That's what's happening right now. We're in Montreal. I did take a little bit of pride in, so I run a couple of gigs back in Melbourne, and we're here in Montreal, and I'm pretty fastidious with checking up on how they go and everything. So comedian Tim Hewitt is running the Thursday gig for me while we're there.
Now, what bits of his can we dissect when we're done with this story?
And then he just ran the Thursday night gig, and I went, oh, how did it go? And he goes, oh, man, it was actually really bad numbers. It was this many people. And I was like, fuck. Good, I was missed. You know, that wouldn't have happened with me there. I've never had those sort of numbers when I'm there. So
I mean, a lot of people just didn't turn up because they knew you weren't there.
Yeah.
In fact, you said before I should explain, you know, the whole thing about Daslo should be dead.
Yes.
In fact, what I should have really explained was that I'm talking to you guys in Montreal because that will come as more of a shock to the audience.
Yeah.
And we're in your hotel room, and it's a huge power move. We're sitting. Not only are we sitting down, and you're standing, but you've also got your laptop facing us. The wallpaper of which is a picture of you.
Yeah.
So we're just sitting here looking at multiple images of you. I mean,
we're starting to think we're not doing as well as you.
That's actually a good point. In fact, it's not just one picture of me now that I look at it. It's like 19 pictures of me because it's my backdrop from my comedy festival show.
Yeah.
The reason I am standing is I have a bad back. I've been traveling with a bad back, which has been an adventure. It's okay when I'm standing up, but as soon as I sit down, so obviously plane travel and like, you know, cabs and stuff are a nightmare.
Yep.
So
we heard about that.
Made the news. So anyway, thank you Qantas for my comedy festival show for next year. Literally the last day of my Australian tour, and they gave me like an hour and a half of new material. So I bless you.
Yep.
I will keep flying with you guys.
Have you talked about that at all yet in any public sphere?
We've mentioned it a little bit, and I did have you been paying attention, and so it's fair to say it came up a few times on have you been paying attention.
But you were keeping the powder dry. You were letting everyone else do it.
I am letting everybody else talk about it because I have so much good gear and I'm just saving it.
Great.
You know what I mean? Like, it's that thing of going, I could talk about it on a podcast, but people aren't going to pay $45 for the podcast. I've got to fill an hour of your new show, and I have a story about being arrested when I wasn't guilty. It's like the greatest story of my entire life, because so many times I could have got arrested when I was guilty.
Yeah.
So is this new show, is that the whole show?
Whole show.
Oh, right. And we're talking are we going like full set? Like, are you going to get plane seats and like, you know, you start the show buckled in? I really want you to go all the way.
I got
to
be honest with you. I wasn't until you suggested it.
Yeah, yeah. And then you finished
come
by
on board as a consultant. If
yeah,
you
yeah, yeah.
You finished by dressing as Peter Allen and singing "I Still Call Australia Home" at the end.
Oh, I will call Australia home because that's what I'm thinking. How are you going to work? Are you going to try and like come up with a title themed around it and work the pun into
so
that?
I got some suggestions pretty much immediately from people because this is the good thing about having comedians as friends. They immediately express concern and then send jokes about your situation.
Yeah.
That tended to be the thing. So by the time I got my phone back from the police, it had already been on the news for like an hour. So like I already had like 90 messages on the phone and I would have said about 60 of them were zings from my friends.
Yeah, right.
I reckon Rosenbarks had three goes.
I bet.
Great. Yeah,
but his beautiful girlfriend suggested unwilling and able to assist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Great.
Nice.
That was one of them. But I am going with Will Eagle.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Will Eagle.
I like how you're saying this, like you're really juicing up and going, yeah, this is my whole show next year. It's like, you know, however many months away, 8 months away. It's almost like you're holding Qantas to ransom. Like they hear this and they go, fuck, how much is it going to cost us? We've got 8 months to play with. We can pay him off and he can write something about, I don't know, fucking socks.
I mean, or even just, you know, I understand what you're saying now, which is, like, because I go, well, I'm going to tour this for 6 months.
Yeah.
This is approximately the crowds that would see it. This is approximately the money I would make from doing this
show. Yeah.
So I'm just saying to you guys.
Yeah.
If you could say, match that amount of money.
Yeah.
This whole thing might have happened on a Virgin
flight. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe I've got 20 on Tiger. You know.
Or get a competitor to sponsor the tour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That'd be pretty great.
Oh, that's amazing.
A lot of people told me when it happened that competitors will let you swap over your, if you have enough frequent flyer points, and I have like 1.5 million frequent flyer points with Qantas, that like say Virgin might actually let you come across and swap over your frequent flyer points if you then just exclusively travel with them.
Right.
So there was a part of me that was like,
Yeah.
But I still like Qantas more than Virgin.
Yeah.
My main problem is I've been flying with Qantas for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I have nothing but good experiences.
Yeah.
I had one shitty Qantas Link experience.
Yeah.
I'm not going to like stop going to my favorite restaurant just because one day there was a pube in my food.
Yeah. I found one borry in the spaghetti.
And then that was the end of it. Yeah.
Oh, wow. This is, I love all the hype. I love the hype leading up to this now.
It is one of those things where I just started taking notes. Like, because after it happened, like, there was just so many funny things about it. And, like, not so much about actually literally what happened on the plane, but about being arrested and, you know, being, like, under the whole process of being in police custody and how unprepared for it I was and how I just never imagined I would get arrested, and so I didn't like ask for a lawyer, and I didn't like all the things you meant to do. Mm. I didn't do any of them because I was just like, I was so shocked to be arrested.
Yeah.
Like to the point where I was wearing no underwear because I just put because my back was a bit sore. So I just like pulled my pants so I'm not wearing underwear.
Don't burn your clothes, Don't.
How's this? This is a little sizzle.
This
is some of the stuff I can give away, guys.
Oh,
imagine what I'm saying. That's what I would say. I'm wearing a pair of pants like the ones that you're seeing now. So they've got like a drawstring in them. So they were saying to me, well, technically we're meant to take away that drawstring because, you know, you're in a cell and, you know, you can use it to, you know, harm and damage yourself.
Now, this is in our wheelhouse.
I do not have any underwear on under here. I felt like I was going to be that crazy old guy walking around with my pants around. This has gone badly.
If they leave the drawstring in and then you try to hang yourself with that, your final act is noose goes up, pants come down. What a way to go out. It's the ultimate comedian death, isn't it? Get a dick out suicide.
Yeah, and then the blood's not running down there, so that's not doing yourself any favours either. It's all going to your head.
Cold in the cell.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
so this is how I think about going out when I go to sleep at night as well, exactly that way.
Yeah, I like that you go, I didn't know I was going to be arrested, so I wasn't wearing underwear. Like normally that's the only reason to put on underpants when you leave the house. Like, might get thrown in the clink. I hate wearing them, but there's a fair chance of me getting arrested, so I'll put them on.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, but it's more the idea that, like, if I knew I was going to get arrested, I would put on underwear rather than, like, it's just that idea of going, if you knew you were going to be arrested, there'd be heaps more things
that I would have,
like, done that day. Like, for example, they take everything out of your wallet,
mm.
and, like, I suddenly realize how much old shit, Like, because they like take it all out and they make a list of all the things that you have in your wallet.
Right.
Right.
And I have 5 Western Bulldogs membership cards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're like, I should clean out my wallet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
8 expired condoms.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
that's a brutal session. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what town was it in again? It was
Wagga Wagga.
Wagga Wagga. So you were in the Wagga Wagga clink.
Yeah, the Wagga Wagga police station.
And was there anyone else in there?
I believe, and I don't know, because here's the thing. In that situation, you have heaps of questions, but you don't feel like you should ask them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You feel like you should just be polite and even just like that idea of going to the toilet. I had to go to the toilet for ages.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't even want to ask to go to the toilet. And then I like went, and then I realized, oh, the toilet's in the open. Like, I mean, they give you a tiny little bit of privacy, but I guess because they don't want you to be, I don't know, flushing drugs down the toilet
or whatever it is.
That you, so you really then kind of have to go to the toilet in front of them
in that
situation. So the whole thing was pretty confronting.
Yeah,
it was,
yeah,
it was really full on. But, I mean, obviously, you know, in retrospect, it will be very funny about 4 months from now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Did you kill anyone in there?
One guy, but just... You have to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that the rest of you leave you alone. That's the first thing you do. Walked into the Borger prison station.
I found
the biggest bloke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I went straight to him.
Yeah.
I punched him in the face.
Yeah. It was a policeman.
I mean, there was no other prisoners. That
would be a wonderful end to the show. It's been this very like lighthearted, like, oh, what a silly misunderstanding. And then the last 10 minutes is you describing a brutal murder that you needlessly committed. For a simple mix-up.
Fuck, I hope the Wagga advertiser that week did their, like, celebrity spotting. You know, like, spotted Will Anderson in the clink. That'd be a good get.
Mate, the Wagga, they are, they're called the advertiser.
Are they?
Yeah, the daily advertiser of the Wagga newspaper. Fair to say, they're big fans of mine now because their circulation went up. Like, I was, like, front page news in the advertiser, then the letters to the editor that came in from other passengers who'd been on board wrote into the paper to say,
oh, great.
Nah, this is all bullshit and this is what really went down and blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
And it ran for days. Apparently, the letter to the editor got more hits than anything has ever got on their website. So, they were wrapped.
Did they have
they wish I'd come back every fucking week. did they
have a political cartoonist in that paper?
Oh,
I'd love to have seen that.
Yes.
Bit of Will Anderson in the striped jail suit.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. I haven't gone back because at the time it was reasonably, because being arrested for something that you didn't do is actually, it turns out, quite traumatic. And, you know, I was handcuffed and thrown in a divvy van and, you know, had to go to prison and all those sort of things. So it was like, it was pretty full on. And my back was obviously more fucked afterwards. Had to drive back to Sydney and stuff. So I haven't quite gone back and trawled through the coverage yet. So all I've heard about the coverage is incidental bits from friends and whatever, like including my favorite bit, which was one of the articles said that I only had one leg. Now, my favorite bit about that is that A, they've confused me for Hilsey, but B, they've taken off the rest of Hilsey's leg.
He's only
missing a foot.
Yeah.
Like, and they've gone, nah, one leg.
That's
Adam Hills
so
is a
good.
Pirate. Yeah. And he's Will Anderson.
What? That's Wagga Whispers instead of Chinese Whispers. What that is.
I'm trying to think what the shitty political cartoon in the newspaper would be. I think it'd be you in prison and you're being shivved by a guy, but the guy's wearing a t-shirt that says customer service. You know, on the nose bullshit
and then,
like that.
And then the little platypus in the corner saying, Willie, get out of this one.
Will with one L.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, that's your Fosdyke poster for the tour. So good.
Okay, Montreal. We're here in Montreal because I don't want to burn any more of my show
next year. Yes, for sure.
We're here in Montreal.
Well, my show next year is about me in Montreal.
Well, tell me about your experience here, though, because you guys are doing your podcast, Little Dum Dum Club.
Oh, very quickly, before we finish that one, I just want to say that a couple of days after that, you saying like Rosie, Adam Rosenbach's are sending all that sort of stuff. I was like, I think we'd just done a live Dum Dum Club show, and then the news broke, and we were like, oh, should we send something? And we're like, oh, actually, we're usually a bit inappropriate. We'll just leave this one go just in case this is really bad or whatever it is. But I got on a plane a couple of days after that. I was in Tasmania and I heard a full conversation behind me of two people doing that going, oh, wow, did you hear about Adam Hills going to jail? Oh, they've... I've never heard that. I know you talk a lot about the comparison, about the mix-up, but I've never actually seen it IRL. But, man, they had half an hour on Adam Hills going to jail. So.
Oh, yeah, no, it happens all the time. Yeah. I really do feel... I often feel that with the Hillsy thing, though, is that all I get in reverse is people saying nice things.
Yeah, yeah,
Adam
yeah.
Adam Hills is so nice, and he's never had a scandal of any kind.
Yep. Mm.
So all I have is people come up to me going, oh, Adam, I love Spicks and Specs. You're the nicest guy. You're a real hero.
Yep.
And he must just cop, oh, fuck you at the Logies, man.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Stop
yeah.
smoking bongs on TV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why are you getting arrested on planes?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Poor Hillsy.
Totally. Sorry, back to Montreal.
Yeah, no, so Little Dum Dum, your podcast.
Yeah.
You're doing a North American tour, so we can mention that because people will hear this before at least your other dates, which are in New York and LA?
Yes.
New York on the 2nd of August and LA on the 5th of August.
Okay, so we'll make sure this goes out before that.
Oh, great.
So, so that people can come and see those shows. Give them a proper plug now and then, you know, so that, because if we leave it till the end, people will just stop listening.
Out.
So let's jam it right in the middle
where they
can't skip over this content.
Yep.
So Wednesday, August the 2nd at the Union Hall in Brooklyn in New York, and then Saturday, August the 5th at the Lyric Hyperion in Los Angeles.
Very special guests on both of them.
Yeah, littledumdumclub.com for tickets.
Mm. Okay, nice. So how did the Montreal version of this come about? Because this is the world's biggest comedy festival.
Mm.
It's a crazy... It's unlike sort of the festivals that people might know from, say, back home, Melbourne Festival, those style of festivals. You know, even very different to the Edinburgh Fringe in a lot of ways, because this is, you know, your Hollywood stars, your big sort of shows.
Invite only.
Yeah, invite only festival. Mm. The other night, my show was up against Seinfeld. That sort of festival. Last night, Russell Peters was doing an outdoor gig in front of 20,000 people.
With Naughty by Nature or something
Naughty
like that,
Naughty by Nature,
was it?
And one of the guys from Grandmaster Flash or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
and doing crowd work. He was actually like, Russell Peters was like, in the start of his set, there's like 20,000 people outdoors, and he's like, so what's your name? What are you doing?
Oh, wow.
This is confident.
Yeah.
Just picking on a guy's shoe colour in front of 20,000 up the back. We're going to need this up on the screen. We're going to need to see these shoes.
Yeah, it's sort of cool that we're here because, I mean, you know, this is usually a place for people like you. Like, you know, it's like you and... We saw a list of like all the Australians that were invited, and it was like you and Carl Barron and Tommy Little and a bunch of people that have all done the gala and, you know, have been nominated for Barrys and stuff. And then there's me and Tommy who can't get on the Wangaratta leg of Comedy Roadshow back home. So it's like, wow, we're just sort of out of the blue. Like, we're in very esteemed company.
I mean, it feels like you've Stephen Bradbury'd it.
Yeah, totally.
You've bolted past a lot of people who thought they were on the progression.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, this was like, this is such a big thing in comedy, especially like when you start out. This was like something that I was like desperate to get to go to in any capacity, even to just watch. And then your career goes on, and I'd kind of reached a point where I was like, okay, well, if that was ever going to happen, it would have happened by now. Like, I'm just not in that league of people that stuff happens to, and whatever, that's fine. So to kind of just out of the blue get this call is like... Like, amazing. Like, really, really crazy. Like,
so how has your week been here? Because you came in a bit early and you've been... what are your impressions of Montreal? What have you been doing? What's been going on?
Yeah, well, so far, I mean, we've come all this way to just basically watch you do gigs every night. That's kind of... That's literally all we've done. So we got in on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. And we met up with your manager, who very kindly, like, sorted out, like, getting our passes for us and stuff, because we didn't know where anything was.
Right.
And then she said, I'm going to go meet Will for a drink, and then he's doing these gigs if you want to come along. And, you know, we don't know where anything is or anything, so we just figured that was an easy way to sort of get our bearings.
We've seen you three times. We've hung out with Arnie Donna. It's like, that's all we've done.
It's really been an international experience.
Totally. Oh, it's so weird. It's like, I always liken it back to this thing and when I grew up in Maribor, and you'd go to Ballarat to the McDonald's, and then you'd see people from Maribor in the Ballarat McDonald's, and you go, oh, how you going, mate? You know, and you'd hang out, and it's like, I've never fucking spoken to you in Maribor. That's what it is. It's just talking to Aussies I wouldn't normally talk to over here. But
yeah, so but that's pretty much where we started out on Wednesday. We kind of followed you. I think we thought, because we got here at like 8 p.m. at night after flying all day to get here, I think we thought we might just be rooted and just go straight to bed. But we sort of got a bit of a second wind and, went and watched you do a couple of gigs, had a few beers, there's an after party every night in this hotel where it's free booze and free food. And so we pushed through the jet lag enough to absolutely fuck ourselves up and then get up yesterday and just feel haggard beyond belief.
It's weird to be in the middle, and I don't know how you feel about this, Will, but like, you see the networking in movies and TV back home and stuff in Hollywood or whatever, and you go, oh wow, that's that world. And now we're in the middle of it and you're seeing it actually happen with no irony or anything. So we're just watching it going, This is like, if you tried to do any of this back home, you go, look at this cunt.
Totally, yeah. Like in Melbourne Comedy Festival, people will sit around and talk and go, like, as a joke, go, oh, you going on the hi-fi tonight, mate? Got to go do some networking. Big networking opportunities. But here, yeah, people just literally say that to you without a shred of irony. Yeah. Like, people kept coming up to me at this party the other night and going, how are you going? Are you doing a lot of networking? And I'd laugh and they'd go, what's funny? I'm like, oh, I just think that's kind of a ridiculous thing to just say out loud to another human being.
Yeah.
It is a very culturally different thing because most of the comedians stay in the same hotel. They've got a couple of hotels. But, but basically the Hyatt where we're staying, pretty much everyone who's staying here is part of the festival in some capacity mostly.
Yep.
And so, and the other thing is, if you're not, it's so great to see those people just kind of who've just happened to have booked into the Hyatt at this time of the year.
Oh, man.
And then just wandering through the foyer going, the fuck is going on?
Yeah,
and
totally.
Why is there food everywhere?
Yeah.
Why is there free drinks everywhere? Yeah. Are we allowed to have this food and free drinks?
We were saying that last night. Like, here's a hot tip. If you want a free holiday next year, come to Montreal. Yeah. Walk in. No one's checking any passes.
No. Yeah.
There's free drinks. There's free food. And you're hanging out with fucking Chris
every
Rock
night,
or whoever.
Every night there's these parties in the main bar. And they're all meant to be industry. But then, yeah, no one's checking part. You're not even staying here. You could walk in off the street.
Yeah,
right. Book it now. Book the shitty Best Western down the street
and
just come in here and party every night for free. That's our hot tip.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you like to get free poutine every night and beat Dave Chappelle?
Then
have we got the holiday for you?
Yeah. Fuck. Yeah, just get a backpacker down the road and just come up to the Hyatt every night.
Totally. Wow. Totally.
Have you tried the poutine? Did you? Because I imagine you guys being
straight onto it.
Yeah. I think I've had two or three. Mm. I went to a place called Dirty Dogs where I had a mac and cheese hot dog. A listener of our show who lives here was kind enough to send a list of stuff that she recommends. I just went and had breakfast before this at the place next door called Expectations.
Oh yes.
Which anyone who listens to our show may have heard recently, we had British comedian Russell Howard on the show, who was talking about how great it is. And so having just been there, him thinking that was an amazing breakfast is the biggest indictment on the British breakfast
you will ever hear.
Oh my God. Like, it was not good. And that's all I could think about was, like, you poor little pom, like, coming here and having your mind blown by this.
I did, when I saw where the location is, where it's straight out the front and it's in, like, the mall bit, I'm like, as if the best restaurant in Montreal is in that location.
But it, like, I was looking up the menu online and was like, this sounds great. So here's what I got. Here's what it was on the menu.
Just for the record,
when
Russell was on your podcast
and
he said that, my literal first thought was, you poor bastard.
Yeah.
I have been to that place and it's actually not that good.
Well, so I got what I ordered on the menu was Eggs Benedict with avocado. I love an Eggs Benedict.
Nice.
Love avocado. I thought this sounds great.
Can't go wrong.
Comes out, what it is no muffin. They've fucked off the muffin. So already you're going, well, this now technically isn't a Benedict.
No.
I hate, you can't remove the key ingredient of a dish and still give it the name of the dish. So what, instead of a muffin, what it is an avocado cut in half. And so your Benedict is just sitting on top of a half avocado that was not particularly ripe. So it was pretty firm to cut into. No good.
Yeah, that's
and so
no good.
The guy who brought it out to me, the waiter, he like puts it down. He goes, great choice. This is my favorite. And I immediately looked at it and clocked something was wrong. And I just wanted to go, you're fucked in the head, mate. This is your favorite dish here. Like, I haven't had everything, but this can't be the best. Like, this is no good. So, and also a big, like a quarter slice of watermelon just sitting on the side of the place. Oh. On the side of the plate with my eggs that I'm having.
Right.
No thanks.
Yeah. Nah.
No thanks.
Poor choices.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a lovely guy, Russell, but that's clearly just bad information he's giving people.
Yeah. But to him, like he was saying on our show that, the British, they don't have that culture of dine out breakfasts. So it just made me sad just thinking, fuck, he thought this was good. Like, what kind of shit-ass breakfast are you having?
Yeah.
I feel sorry for him. Lucky he has those millions of dollars in his worldwide career to get him through the hard times of no breakfast.
Yeah. Harley Breen was his support in Australia, and he said he had his eyes open to some very fine dining. So I think Russell made the most of being in Australia.
Totally.
Yeah.
He, just like we're making the most of being in Montreal.
Yeah.
Eating hot dogs and chips
eating
every
chips
night.
And gravy every night.
Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't get that back home.
Yeah.
I do believe, though, that this is, like, I mean, this is not a healthy eating town. Like, I mean,
right.
I think if you were going to go for foods that taste good in Montreal, you meant, like, it is your dirty, gross, junk foody sort of town.
Yeah. You sort of have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen anywhere. I haven't seen anywhere that's, like, it looks, like, close to even, like, you could get something decent, healthy.
No, we did a thing a few years ago. You know, they do that sort of Channel 10 special, you know, that a million people have done over the years, and I did a few times. And it's a real pain in the ass to do, to be honest, because your days are full of having to interview people and
yeah,
those
must,
sort of things.
Must be tough.
But... he says, as he invites you guys over to interview you for podcast.
Yeah. I remember, my favourite comedian of all time is Mitch Hedberg, and I know that when you download sort of clips of Hedberg and stuff, there's one clip of, you know, there's not that many TV clips of him, but one of them is introed by you on the Just for Last special.
And I believe, and this may not be true, but I have said it on the podcast before and nobody's kind of reached out to correct me. So I'm just going to take that as it being true now. If I've said it and no one said it's not true, then it probably is true. But I was told that I did the last ever interview, like last ever official interview with him, because they were trying to make a documentary about him a bunch of years ago, and they were trying to, because we shot in this very hotel, like probably a 10-15 minute interview, probably a minute of which went to air on the Channel 10 special, but somewhere, hopefully, there's like 10 or 15 minutes of me interviewing Mitch Hedberg and talking to Mitch Hedberg, so they were trying to find that footage for this documentary. I'm not really sure whatever happened after that, but
it's so funny to think back to a time where it's like hard to find the footage of something. Yeah. Like stuff just isn't all automatically archived. Like that interview is sitting in on a VHS tape somewhere, and someone literally has to physically track it down.
Oh, and it annoys me too, because like we did so many good, because they used to do this Australian show at midnight. And so like it would go from midnight until 3 o'clock in the morning. And one year the lineup was myself and Hilsey and Julia Morris and Rhys Darby and Flight of the Conchords.
Right.
Oh, and Jim Jefferies.
Wow.
So it was a pretty solid sort of lineup of people. And we had to do the Flight of the Conchords interview after the gig in the stairwell of the gig. So it's about 3 o'clock in the morning. We are all like a combination of drunk and just tired and whatever. And me and the Conchords had like a 45 minute conversation where I just started asking them about what their ideal gig would be. And they started improvising this thing about this space festival, blah, blah, blah. And they couldn't use any of it for the special because you couldn't take like 1 minute
out.
Yeah.
It was like one of those things where I was just like, where's that?
Put that out.
It was fucking brilliant. Just put that on the internet.
That was a proto podcast you were doing.
Yeah.
So I did one with Jay Baruchel. He's Seth Rogen's mate from the movies, local Canadian guy.
Yeah.
They asked, can you take it for some local food? He lives here. So it was like, take him somewhere in Montreal that you like to eat. And we're thinking, oh, this will be cool, right? And we went to some place, again, that was just like dirty poutine, like hot dogs, blah, blah, blah. And I sat there for an hour because we were shooting this thing and they had to set it up and whatever. So he and I would just talk. And like they got all this food as props, like a whole plate at a table of this sort of stuff. And then he just sat there and just ate all this like horrible, horrible food like it was the most delicious shit in the world. Yeah. So I don't think they're spoilt for great food choices in this town.
Yeah.
So what else? What else are your impressions of Montreal? What's this festival like to new eyes? I guess that's the question I'm asking, because I've been coming here on and off for about 15 years and I've seen it change a lot. And, you know, so you have a different perspective on it than someone who just walks in and goes, what's your impression of it from what you've seen?
It was a weird one to come to because it was sort of like one of those rare things, I think, where like just going, I actually don't know what to expect. Like I know that there's big shows and I've heard it's great, but in terms of like layout and setup, because the festivals that we have in Australia are all sort of vaguely similar, you know? And so kind of, but I don't know, like the fact of everything being based in essentially the one hotel or kind of across the street from each other is very cool. But then to get to some of the venues, you have to walk outside through this street festival, which is all just super French, like just all this like outdoor kind of mime shit going on where, because this festival goes for like 3 weeks or something, doesn't it? And
the first half of it's French.
This, all this stuff, which to us seems like the biggest thing in the world, is almost just like an afterthought. like,
well, there's this,
to them?
There's a local comedian called Sugar Sammy who is like the biggest sort of Montreal, Quebec-y, yeah, Canadian
comedy.
How do
you get that big with a name like that? That's the worst name.
Well, his last name, it's one of those classic ones where he has a name that I imagine sounded very foreign to be introduced early on in his comedy career.
Right.
Yeah. And so he's obviously decided, I can't get them to say my last name. They're going to fuck that every year.
Yeah.
And I don't want to just be Sammy because it always sounds weird to just kind of introduce someone with one name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you become something else. He's sold out two galas as a host, but his trick is, well, he's not his trick, but his appeal is that he is equally kind of fluent in French and English.
Right.
So at the gala last night, there was a couple of times where he'd like set it up in English and then do the punchline in French and the crowd would go wild. And I'd just be sitting backstage going, well, I guess that's funny.
Oh, wow.
But that's the thing about this city is also the bilingual thing is amazing because like homeless people, like yesterday, this homeless person came up to me to ask for some money and they asked in French and I did the, I was like, oh, bro. Yeah, I was like, oh, sorry, I don't speak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they just straight into English and asked in English. I was like, hang on, you speak two languages?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Australia, you wouldn't be homeless if you speak two languages. You'd be fucking prime minister.
Yeah, 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 totally, like, totally.
We were talking about this the other day because we're idiots and we don't bother to do any research on anything ever. So why is this city like why is it French here? I don't get it.
Well, I mean, there was half of Canada was settled by the French. So like basically half of Canada is, you know, French first. And then, but Montreal is the one, seems to be, well, Quebec, I guess, in general. But
yeah.
It's French first. That's the big thing, is like you've got to do French first. And if you don't do French first, you can get into real trouble for
That's the one thing I've noticed of any non-English speaking country that I've gone to. This one seems to be the most, like, you barely get English options anywhere. Yeah. Like, they're really,
this is what I was going to tell you. So I've got the bad back and I had to get on the plane. So they booked me in for the day I got here, a physiotherapist appointment. And, you know, you're going to a new medical professional in a different country. It's always a bit, you know, scary. And they hand me the form. You know, you have to fill in allergies and all that sort of thing. All in French.
Great.
And I'm just, like, going through trying to guess, like, what things are.
Yeah.
I'm like, I guess that sounds like arthritis.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, I studied French for, like, 3 years at high school and then dropped it. And I've never been more upset at myself for dropping it than being here. Like, I was just like, fuck, I'd feel like a baller just being able to turn up and just absolutely, like, every shopkeeper and stuff just have full-on conversations with people in the street.
Well, the problem is you need to be able to have full-on conversations too, though.
Yeah.
Like, when I first came here, I always used to, like, because they will, generally in a service industry here, most people, particularly in the inner city, most people will speak French and English. Like, the further you get out, you might find some people that only speak French.
Yeah.
But, like, in the middle of the city, you know, it's all set up for tourists. There's big festivals on here at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're going to go to Starbucks or whatever, they'll start in French, but they will very easily and comfortably speak English too.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, but what you've got to do is cut them off at the pass. Because early on, you'd come in and they'd be like, bonjour. And you'd be like, got this one.
Yeah.
Bonjour.
Yeah.
And then they'd get into the next sentence and you'd be like,
sorry.
I'm
going to fool
you with that one word that
I
do. So now it's like, bonjour. And I'm like, hello.
Yeah.
Let's just set this where it needs to be set.
Yeah.
It's so weird though. Like, I keep thinking, like, imagine if, like, all of Western Australia was just Italian. Like, that's literally what it is. Like, what a world that would be.
I mean, I would love that.
Yeah, that would be kind of great. It would make Perth a lot more fun.
Yeah.
I know, I like Perth. Can I ask, what do we talk about, what we're sitting in front of your bed and there's a huge lump in your bed.
Yes.
Can we talk about that or not?
We can. So it ties into the physiotherapy thing. I have to sleep with a pillow under my legs so that my back doesn't hurt. So for some reason, when the maid came and made my bed, she left the pillow in the bed and made the bed around it. So
I just keep thinking, because at the start when you said about Tommy's got an extra life, because Tommy had cancer and he recovered, it looks like your bed now has cancer. That has there's a massive lump in your bed.
A little tumor.
I get that checked out, mate.
Yeah. So I go to see this physiotherapist, and I shouldn't judge someone like this. This is not a good way to judge someone. But she was too beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know that sort of thing where you're just like, I don't know if, like, this is a horrible, this is how ingrained, I guess, like, you know, sexism is in our sort of brains. But when I immediately saw how beautiful she was, I immediately had doubts that she would be good at her job.
Right.
I was like, you're too beautiful to be as competent as I need you to be.
Yeah.
But that was completely misfounded. She was sensational at her job. She was like a sports physio. She was really, really great. But the fact that she was so attractive was still...
Like,
because, particularly because... you have to take off all your, like, essentially apart from, like, you know, your underwear, like, to get the physio on your back and stuff done, you have to take it all off.
Yeah.
And I'm not in the best shape in my life. And I know nothing's going to happen. It's not like you think, you know, this is going to turn into something. You're just, like, embarrassed.
By the way, do you ever wear underwear, by the way? It doesn't sound like you do.
Do you own underwear? Are you doing okay?
I bought underwear because I'd forgotten to bring some to go to the physio.
Right.
That's actually true.
Really?
Right. And I couldn't even find underwear. I bought some pair of, like, short shorts that are, like, what I'd imagine, like, you know, your sort of more confident Mediterranean man might wear to a beach in summer.
Right.
Yeah. So I had my little short, you know, kind of European short shorts on. And
which looks even weirder because it looks like you've pre-prepared this for her. You know what I mean?
I reckon it, I don't know. I reckon I'd look worse in my undies than I would in the, like, it felt like I'd professionally prepared.
I was
like, no, I'm respectful of you.
Right.
Really encased this in some sort of short that'll keep it all in here.
That's great, trying to look cool in front of her, but at the same time going, I bought these for you.
Yeah.
They've still got the receipt hanging up. So at the end, she's like showing me, she's giving me a list of exercises that I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this one that's kind of, I'm showing you guys here, but essentially, you know, you kind of have to lie on the end of the bed and then sort of put my hips over the end of the bed and kind of do some sort of leg raise situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so she says, I'll just demonstrate it for you, right? And now she goes, now just stare at my, like, I can't remember what she said. She probably didn't say stare at my buttocks, but she said stare at, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't. Like, even though I was medically meant to be, like, doing it, I was just embarrassed because it felt pervy.
So, literally,
a doctor was showing me how to fix myself, and I couldn't look at what she was showing
me.
I'll just read the printout.
I'll
find the printout. I just feel like this is crossing a line.
I don't want to be looking at that, something that sexy with no underwear on. Yeah.
Get a load of Dr. Woke over here. Very nice.
I just, this has just popped into my head, and this has come up lately.
I want to fuck a doctor.
I am horny.
Take two of these and call me in the morning. Just hands you a diagram of a 69er. There you go.
Something's popped into my head and popped in my pants too. So I don't like talking about this, but it's been a habit on our show lately, but I'm going to describe a dream I had last night.
Nice. So, I love this.
I know it's super boring because it's just someone saying, this is something I thought of when I was asleep. But because I think we went to bed, you know, reasonably late last night, and we knew that we were coming to do this morning.
Yep.
So it's always that thing with me. I've got a little bit of anxiety of waking up early enough and getting my stuff done and whatever. So obviously you were in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I dreamt about you last night where I dreamt that for some reason we had done this, and I don't know why. You know, there's little bits in dreams that you can't, you'll see your uncle and he's an eagle and you go, yeah, that's Uncle Eagle, you know. And in your head you go, that makes sense completely. You know what I mean?
Are you mansplaining dreams to us?
Yeah. But it was like that. It was like that where all...
That's great. The most relatable thing that you can talk about. Yeah. It's like, so basically what happens, you go to sleep, your brain sort of switches off and it's like just kind of throwing out random information.
Yeah. You didn't know about Uncle Eagle, did you? So
So your lungs take in oxygen.
Yeah.
That keeps you alive.
Yeah. This stuff I'm about to describe didn't actually happen. It was in my head.
Right.
Uncle Eagle's not a real person. For some reason, you gave me your social media password or something to
great.
Even less realistic than Uncle Eagle.
For some reason, that now I'm devastated that detail is missing.
Yeah.
I'd love to know how we got
there.
That's
what I'm saying. That's why I can't explain it. That's why I was trying to explain dreams to you. There's a little bit of information missing there, and we don't know why. So I had your social media passwords or whatever, and it was like you'd said, put it out or whatever. For some reason then, I'd done like a massive, I'd acted like Fiona O'Loughlin on social media and used it completely wrong. And I had then somehow tried to send a message to a friend.
Yeah.
But what I'd done was send a tweet out from you, and the message I sent was extremely offensive. Extra. I won't even repeat what it was here. Like, I remember.
Can you give us a sense, though, just so that we like.
There were some words that are not allowed to be funny in there. There was some proper bad stuff in there.
Racial or sexual?
Just bad words, which I don't even know what category to put it. I'll tell you later. So,
I think we're talking about a bit of a buffet here. This sounds real good.
Yeah, it's no good. And I don't even. And let's. I want to put this on the record. This was not conscious, Carl, thinking these words were funny. This was dream.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still stuff that's just in your brain. Like, that's what dreams are. The brain, like, filtering through information that it doesn't need to use. Don't try and let yourself off the hook. It's still stuff that's. It's like people going, "Oh, really sorry, I was drunk." It's still you. It's not like you get possessed and you're a conduit. It's still drunk. You is still just accessing stuff that's in the database.
Hey, I'm being nice. I'm telling you about this. I could have just hid this in my head and not said anything. At least I'm getting it out and confessing.
You weren't that nice in that message you sent to me last night.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know which dream friend you were sending the message to?
No, I don't. Okay, I don't. But what I did do was I sent. I was doing a thing like a proper old man or something where I was trying to send it to someone. It went out under your Twitter account.
Also, just by the way, like, for a dream, the idea that it's all happening, like, on fucking Twitter or something is, like, such a specific, like, little dream.
Yeah.
Like, your uncle was an eagle a minute ago.
Now
you're just tweeting in a dream.
Yeah. You're such a millennial.
Yeah. So the message went out, and then I think it went out overnight or something, and then the heat started coming back. And then you came to see me, and you were crying. You were crying because it was so bad and you got in so much trouble. And then you had some really weirdly specific sponsor, like the egg board had dropped you.
That's really bad, because after all the nice things I said about their restaurant expectations.
Yeah. Some very, very, I think it was eggs that had dropped you. Like, some very general food sponsor had dropped you. And so you were really upset. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And then you said, have you tried to make this right at all? And then I went, I'm pretty sure I've got a memory I did try and make it right. And then we both checked my Twitter account. And I'd put out a tweet that said, there was an offensive tweet out there last night. That was me. Sorry. With no reference to what your tweet was, that
and
it was
the
your
idea
tweet.
That Will's original tweet still isn't deleted at
no,
this
no,
point.
No,
it's
no, no, it wasn't.
Still there.
It wasn't.
Yeah. What I would like to know, Will.
Also, by the way, I love the idea that you think it's like a fucking parody to fucking do a horrible tweet on my account and then apologize on your account.
Yeah.
It's not the same amount of people, mate.
Yeah. Some of this stuff is not making sense. Yeah.
I would love to know, Will, what would the circumstances have to be for you to entrust this man with your social media logins? Let's go through it. Like, what would we have to do for this to become reality?
Even if he was back in Wagga jail and he was entrusting me with his phone, he wouldn't do it. He'd go, no, I don't want that one phone call.
Dan Illick asked to have my social media 1 year because...
Wow. If you said to me, who's one person in comedy that asked for my social media account, I would have probably picked him.
Him doing that is more on brand than Carl sending an offensive message full of unbroadcastable words.
It was for his new character, Dan Willick. No, it was after... So what happened was... Obviously, I went to the Logies the first year and tweeted, and it became a whole sort of big thing. And then the next year at the Logies, they banned tweeting for a year. You weren't meant to tweet at the Logies. And I went that year as well, and I used Dan Illick's phone to log into my Twitter because I didn't take my phone that year. That was the big thing.
Right.
And then I got bored halfway through and logged into my Twitter on Dan's phone and started tweeting and got in trouble again.
Right.
And so the third year, I didn't go. I don't know if it was my choice or theirs. Point is that I did not know. And Dan was like, well, it'd be funny if you give me the login to your Twitter.
Oh.
You cannot be there, but I can live tweet it on your account still. And then, like, it'd be, because I clearly wasn't there, you know, and it's not at the same time. So that was, I did think about that. Like, but I was like, oh, this might still bring down a rain
that'd,
of shit.
That'd
I would
just
let
be...
you have mine if, we recorded a thing beforehand that was like time stamped and dated.
Yeah, right.
That said that you were doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't think afterwards people would believe it.
Yeah.
If I did a really offensive tweet and they went, oh no, Chandler's been in there.
Yeah.
So it's you holding a copy of today's paper.
Yeah.
It's like a proof of life video. I like that. Yeah, that thing of someone else getting your account though. Like, for the show.
But with Danny, like, he wouldn't be. live tweeting the Logies. It'd be all self promo stuff for him. He'd just trick you into it and then be just talking about what he's up to at the moment.
But like that show, I'm a Celebrity. For work. The show, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, where you go into the jungle and eat spiders and all that shit. To me, the most horrifying part of being on that show would be you have to give your Twitter account over to other people while you're in there.
Yeah.
That would be, if I was on it, that would be the main thing I'd be stressing about the whole time in there. Like, fuck, I hope they don't go into the DMs. Like, that would be just, that would be keeping me awake at night.
Yeah, that would definitely be my major issue with it as well. I'd let you tweet from my account. But I would not let you read the fucking things that slide into my
Yeah. But that was it, Nazim, because I did Nazim's when he was in the jungle for that show, and I did his one for a day, and I got into it and went, oh, you haven't cleared your DMs or anything? So afterwards, I was like, man, did you know that you... And he was like, oh, my God. Like, once he got out of the jungle, he hadn't realized that until then, and went, fuck, everyone had access to all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's Nazim, though. There wouldn't have been too much, like, stuff. Know.
How often are people sliding into your DMs? Is it pretty frequent?
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, a lot. I mean, obviously, mostly people... I mean, do you have to follow? I don't even know how it works.
You have to follow
anymore.
Each other, you I have think. To follow but you each can other. Set it that you can people
yeah,
can...
Yeah, so I think mine's only if you follow each other. So it's normally someone that I at least, you know, have known or like am a fan of or whatever. It's like not... It's but it's very strange when it happens. There's one, I probably can say this now because he isn't the Premier of New South Wales anymore. But
this narrows it down.
But no, Barry O'Farrell, do you remember Barry O'Farrell? Yeah. He was the New South Wales Premier who ended up having to quit because he'd been given a free bottle of Grange or something.
Oh, yeah.
But he was a massive fan of, I think he's just been a fan of my work over the years in different bits. Like when Will and Limo got cancelled on Triple M, in his press conference that day, his lead thing was, he's like, I'm devastated by that Will and Limo's been cancelled. What am I going to listen to at the gym sort of thing?
Great.
And so over the years, he would just like slide into my DMs when there was some political, say if I was tweeting about some political debate or whatever, or some character in politics, he would slide into my DMs and like make the most indiscreet fucking jokes about people or
whatever.
And the whole time I'm like, you're giving me a lot of trust that I wouldn't just like tell people all about this. But they're always pretty funny. So I was like,
That's great.
Yeah, otherwise, I don't think anything too... Like normally, I wouldn't have thought.
I mean, if they're not super, if you don't have them open, then you can't just get anyone. Like,
yeah, it's not like I've got like Facebook on my official page.
Oh yeah,
like that's the one where
a real wasteland.
Jeez,
yeah,
like,
nice.
I mean, some stuff happens on that official page. That
what's the percentage if you had to do the pie chart? 100%. What do you got? You got positive. You got negative. You got weird. What do you got in there?
Okay, so this is what I tend to find. If they're going to send you a message, I would say 90% positive, but posting on the page, that's a whole fucking different.
Right.
So if I post something about, say, refugees or whatever, like people who post on the page, that could go fucking anywhere, all over the place.
Because you don't need to be a fan of yours to see that come up in your newsfeed. Yeah. So people like to just jump in and, whatever. Yeah.
But messages, I would say probably, so for example, when the Wagga thing happened, like, I was like, maybe there's going to be a whole bunch of shitty messages there.
Yep.
So I actually got Dionne, my manager, because she has access to my official page anyway. I said, hey, can you just go through and just see if there's anyone that I need to respond to or someone who's a friend or whatever who sent a message, because I don't want to have to fucking go through a heap of people. But as it turned out, like, for that one exactly, there was only one, I think, out of probably, like, 70 or 80 messages of support. There was kind of one bad one. It's amazing in those situations who comes out of the woodwork. My favorite one was Pete Evans. You know Pete Evans? Pete Evans sent me a message.
Right, because he would have related to any negative sort of social media backlash or anything.
Right, and also he had some bone broth recommendations for osteoarthritis. Great.
I want to know who's the one negative comment. Like, who's that? Who's pro airline in this day and age that's like, oh, nah, mate, you fucking had it coming. Off them.
They weren't pro airline. They were just anti-me. Just and this was a good excuse to kind of pursue their anti-me agenda.
Man, they should lock you up and throw away the key.
So I do some writing for the project on Channel 10. And part of that job sometimes is to go through the private messages that the page has been sent and stuff. Man, is that an education on what people from Townsville think about things.
Right.
Fucking hell. It is like, especially with Waleed being on the show, like, he doesn't have any social media, Twitter or Facebook or anything. Man, good thinking, Waleed.
Right.
Because if he was on that, fuck, he cops it. But just, I do this little game where every time you read a negative comment, a negative message sent to the page, I then automatically have to click it up and see what sort of a person this person is.
Right.
And honestly, I reckon 80% plus, it's always someone from far north Queensland that has a car as their avatar. Yeah. 80% easily.
Great.
Easily.
Great.
It's just insane. The worst thing, or for all the names that he gets called, I think the worst insult is always that they always spell his name W-O-L-E-E-D. Waleed.
Yeah.
Waleed. It just sounds yuck. It just sounds bad. But man, oh, fuck. The amount of abuse that everyone got. There must be about, I reckon, 10-15% positive messages that are put in there. And the rest of them are just insane people from Queensland.
Yeah. But I think that's the thing we're getting to now. Well, I think the thing that you get to when you're in that situation, Waleed's really good about it, which is he knows that there's going to be a whole bunch of negative stuff.
Yeah.
And he knows that it doesn't actually affect his life in any way.
Yeah.
And you can just completely ignore it. And I think this is what this kind of social media world, for all the bad that is, that nastiness is there. It kind of goes, you know, in the old days when you used to get upset, like before social media, you read one bad review or one bad thing and you'd be like, oh, this is devastating.
Yeah.
Now you're like, yeah, most people hate me. And you just go, well, that doesn't matter.
But that's such a weird point to have to mentally get to now. Like, that can't be like generally good for you. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a thing that if you're in any kind of like public field, it's just expected that you have to get to a point where you're just okay with reading pages and pages of abuse.
Man, especially us. The people who like us abuse us all the time.
Well, that's a whole... You've got a whole new twist on it.
Yeah, totally. I literally banned two people from our page today.
Yeah.
That are fans.
They'll be studying us in schools in like 50 years' time. Like, we'll be held up as like an example of the absolute depths of what social media did to people.
Last night, we did a live Facebook video. We were sharing a hotel room. We were in bed, in separate beds, but I sleep in the nude, so I had no top on, and we put a live video.
Hang on, you've been fucking judging me this whole time for not wearing underpants. Mr. fucking sleeps in the nude even when his mate's in the other bed.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. He drops this on me before we go. He's like, oh yeah, I sleep in the nude. I'm like, not in the fucking room with me, you're not.
You don't.
Buy some fucking gym jams, mate.
There's a doona on top.
You can take these shorts I'm never going to wear again.
It's fine when I'm wearing under a sheet. I don't even know what you're wearing under a sheet.
What if the fire alarm... Exactly. What if the alarm goes off?
Right. No. Well, if the alarm goes off, there's bigger problems than my wang hanging out.
What if you sleepwalk? Or, you know, you go to the toilet and you accidentally get back in the wrong bed. You guys are the Ernie and Berta podcast.
Yeah, we really are.
Yeah. So we did that last night. And of course, that's in hindsight inviting a lot of abuse.
Right.
And there's going to be people going this and that or whatever. But before I just went through it, and there was someone who's like a fan of ours that just went, you guys are fucked. God, I'm looking at you now. I can't believe you've had a girlfriend for 9 years, and then went, she must be a fucking dog. Like, all right, well,
leave the fucking misos out of it, mate. Yeah.
Hey, Tiger.
Yeah.
All fun and games.
Yeah.
We have our own podcast.
Yes.
That's fine. We understand what this is.
Yes.
But...
Yeah. I did click on it. I was like, I would have lost my $10 because I clicked on it. It was like, no, it was Northern New South Wales. There was no Queensland.
So there would have been a rugby league avatar then.
Yeah.
That's not what normally I find if I repost something of Briggs's about like Indigenous rights.
Right.
A lot of sort of like rugby league fans from country New South Wales who just really do not agree with my opinion.
Yeah.
Fuck, I didn't know that. That's so fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that's because I think...
And then if we talk about that, then I'm sure within 24 hours I'll get a message from that person going, why the fuck did you ban me from the place?
Yeah,
like,
have come
what do you reckon?
Big old sook.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man.
There is that thing where sometimes you just go, oh, yeah, there's a line, and people don't quite know where the line is.
Totally.
You're like this. I mean, I guess it'd be better if people just weren't terrible and mean.
Yeah.
But, like, I have occasionally blocked someone online because I just missed the joke they were making.
Yeah.
Sure.
I
have done that. I mean, even yesterday, like, there was somebody just going, yeah, how would you describe that show? Ha ha ha. About, like, me posting about the podcast. And it felt really mean. And I'm like, oh, right. And then I realized that 2 weeks ago we were talking about how we couldn't describe what the show was. And they were just making like a nice, like reference, like, hey, I listened to the show. And I'm like, fucking, oh, hang on.
Because you did a month ago on the podcast, you did describe your girlfriend as an absolute dog.
I did not do that.
This person's calling back to that,
hey,
I now realize.
Hey, she puts up with enough. You don't need to make stuff up for her to put up with.
True, very
Jesus
true.
That Christ. It always does feel like, because I mean, I have listened, I think, probably to all of your podcasts, and it is hard for when you have a partner or another person, because obviously they're part of your life and they will come up in relation to you, but often they don't want to be involved in this. Is that kind of what's the kind of deal there?
Well, I started talking about recently about my girlfriend, who we've been together not quite a year, and at the time, this is like a month ago, and people started going on the Facebook going, oh, what? When did this happen, that Dassalo's got a girlfriend? Like, I'm meant to have sent out a press release. Like this. There was someone in particular who was like, could not believe that they had not been somehow personally informed. Like, why didn't he say anything?
Yeah.
I listened to this for free. I deserve to know.
It's
also knowing that if you start talking about some girl you've just started dating on your podcast, chances are you're not going to make it to a year.
Yes, exactly. And also it's like, she hasn't come up because she's just cool and great. Like, it's a blessing that she's not fucked and a well of content. Like, that's good.
Yeah. To be fair, you're not going to bring her up. She's only going to enter the canon if I bring her up.
Yeah,
so I've been nice so far. It's like we brought up a girl that you were seeing there for a while, and then that ended. And it was like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do that. But my girlfriend is a bit like, there's no set rule. I've made the rule to not bring her up because I don't think she knows what she's in for if she gets fully introduced into the universe of what we do. Because she used to go, did you talk about me this week? And I'd be like, no. And she'd complain about not being talked about. And then we'd talk about her. And then people started following her on social media or whatever it is. And she'd go, this is freaking me out. These strangers are fucking messaging me or whatever. I'm like, yeah. So this is what you don't want.
Yeah.
Don't get in this world. Start to see some of the abuse I get. Imagine you getting that. And she's way too nice. Like, she's very different to me.
Yep.
She's a very nice person. She would not post anything from your Twitter account.
I would let her have my social media details at any stage.
Exactly.
She'd post about some romantic comedies she likes.
Yeah, totally. She'd keep the Eggboard sponsorship for sure.
She got me the Eggboard sponsorship. That's how I got it in the first place.
So she's not involved in any of this. Like, I know a lot of our listeners would love to see her do a live show or something like that, but it will never happen. She's too nice to cop the abuse that, for example, I've already read out today. Like, oh man, she doesn't need to be in that world.
Yeah, it's pretty unsettling.
Live wedding podcast?
Wouldn't have thought so. It's certainly.
So we're having the reception at the European Beer Cafe, and
I've had to, like, I have to figure out an MC for this wedding at some stage. Uh-huh. And it's literally been a thing where I go,
oh, here we go. Will, what are you doing in September?
No, I'm being like, who of my mates can do it but would hang the least shit on me whilst doing it?
So your wedding is, it's coming up. It's not that long
it's
after
at some
we
stage.
Get back.
I mean, I'm glad that you're taking the same approach to booking your wedding speakers as you do to booking your podcast. Right? Like, the day before, you'll be ringing around town.
Totally.
It'll end up being co-hosted by Mooney and Leona doing a double act.
It's not a joke.
Your wedding is, it's a little
Let's
bit...
Let's not give
I'm
too
not giving
much
the location.
Detail.
It's out of town. Like, Jesus. It's necessitating an overnight stay.
Okay.
What I want to do is, I want to find a pub nearby and get in the night before and put on a gig with the guest list.
Wow.
What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's
I want to profit off this thing.
I mean, you got to... night before, are you a kind of... Would it be a traditional you don't see your... I mean, obviously you guys live together and stuff, right? So, but would you still do the kind of traditional separate on the night before and that sort of thing?
Totally. No, everything would be done for my girlfriend. So she wants to... You know, she's doing everything traditionally and whatever. Yeah.
Right. So you could do a gig the night before then.
Yeah, yeah.
Technically.
Yeah. Do you know what the more difficult thing will be? Is that I run a gig on a Saturday night. Yeah. I'm going to have to try and book that gig.
Oh, right. And all the comics will be out of town
yeah.
at your wedding.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good night for people who aren't friends of yours, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Finally getting on your gig.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, now you're fine to give out the day that it's happening on. Before, you didn't want any. I love how scared you are of listeners coming and gate crashing.
Oh, yeah. Exclusive. A wedding on a Saturday. Hot scoop. Yeah. Yeah. I just, yeah, I don't.
You were freaked out about me just saying it's out of town.
Yeah. Yes.
Hot scoop, you're not having it on one of the horses and carriages in the Melbourne CBD.
Yes.
Not getting your wedding photos taken on the steps of the Parliament House.
Fuck, what else can we talk about? Let's get back to the bed with cancer. Oh, yuck. Fucking hell.
Well, we have to finish up kind of soon anyway, because I have to go downstairs and catch up with our friend Tommy Little for thing that he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
Before we do, so rest of your trip, what's on the schedule? I mean, obviously, you've got your podcast, but...
Yeah, what other gigs plans? Have you got that we can come to?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where else do you want to see me, guys?
Yeah. Can I say, we came to your solo show last night, and it was great, because you've sort of, like, been coming over here a few years, kind of essentially starting from scratch over here.
Absolutely.
So you're in a much smaller room here than you would be in Australia.
I think it's a capacity of, I think there's 50 seats. You could probably get like 60 or 70 if they stand up the back, but like there's, and previously I've done shows here. There were some guys in last night who've been to the last 5 years that I've been here shows. So they're loyal. Good on those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But previously I have done one show. Per time I've come here.
Right.
And it was in a 100-seat venue and it sells out.
Yeah.
And so then this year they went, how about doing 6 shows?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, well, I probably will not fill those. It turns out we'll just spread that audience over the week. But it's been really fun.
It was amazing to come see you in such a small room and still be envious of the numbers you were getting.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, wow, I can't wait till I grow up and I can play a 40-seater. But here's what's funny, and I know this means nothing, but it is a fact that is very funny to me, that our podcast tomorrow is in a bigger venue than your solo show is.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Well, let's see how many people come. Though.
Exactly.
Totally.
It's easy to laugh about it now before we face the reality of doing it to 2 people.
God.
But, yeah.
I was sitting there last night the whole time. Half of me was listening to your show. Half was going, fuck, I wish we had this room in this audience for our podcast. Yeah.
It would be a really fun room for you. Like,
totally.
It's that right sort of size.
Yeah.
There's a brilliant comedian called Mark Forward who some people might know. He's doing a show in there afterwards. And it's just a beautiful venue for a show like his. He's such a great act, and it just kind of, it is actually a really, like, to find a place that's like, you know, where you can come and do a 50-seater. The interesting thing is it's only small things that change. Like, for me, it's been really fun because it's a long time since I've, like, I do rooms and stuff where there might be 40 people, but you know, you're just doing a spot or a drop-in or whatever. That idea of actually going, here's my, you know, my 70-minute show that you know, I've been touring, like, you know, to big crowds.
And you've got that reaction in your head of, you know, anticipation of a certain reaction off certain bits because you're playing to 5,000-6,000 people a night, whatever it is. And now you're getting that off 40 people. That must throw off your rhythm a little bit.
Oh, crazy. Yeah. And it also means that sometimes what happens is, this is the kind of undiscovered thing, is sometimes a bit that always works just... it doesn't, because I laugh at the next, you know, two of the bits beforehand and then just kind of drop off a joke, which is weird. But the other thing is, I think it actually allows some of the smaller jokes to do better.
Totally.
Like, some of them do better in a smaller room. Like, some of them aren't good enough to kind of play the big room, but you put them in a smaller room and they actually have a, like, there's one joke I actually mentioned it in the show last night that I've always loved about being the only person of your race in a room.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And it got... the reaction last night that I think it should have been getting every gig I've ever done it.
Well, that got such a big reaction that we were like, you know, oh, that's probably, you know, that's one of your go-to jokes in the show. And then you're like, oh, no, that never goes well.
Yeah. Never goes well. It's like my joke that I love that just doesn't real. I mean, it goes fine, but like doesn't go how it went last night, that sort of thing.
What I really liked was that you're using the same walk-on music in a 40-seater that you use in your thousands of theaters.
You got this ball-busting ACD soundtrack that's like when you play the tennis and it's like, oh, the man is in the house, and then you're doing it last night to 40 people.
I had a moment where I was like, why wouldn't you change the music? And then I thought about it more. I'm like, no, fuck that, keep the same music. Like
my tech, when I was saying to him that's what I was doing, he's like, are you sure? And I'm like, yes, it's funnier to me to do it this way. Like I said, I want it to sound like it's going to be this huge, I mean, and then it's just me talking to 40 people for an hour.
It's so funny because you have the very, from the very start of it as well, where it's just that tss, tss, which in a huge theater, yeah, you can imagine, yeah, builds lights down, people, yeah, like, yeah, fucking yes, and it fucking killed me last night.
That's normally
funny.
What it is. That yeah, starts playing, the lights go down, then they start to do a chase, the flash, you got the big Fosdyke background.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like the smoke starts getting pumped in, you yeah, know, yeah, that yeah, sort yeah, of thing. Back in black, yeah, I do the voiceover, yeah, I walk out, you get to hear heaps of the song because yeah, it's a long way to walk out to the middle of the stage.
People have got to sit down from giving the standing out at the start. Literally, yeah.
Last literally night you hit the mic before Angus had even started up. Like, right, it was great. Yeah.
No, I mean, seriously, because I'm two steps from where the microphone is to the curtain and yeah, I'm yeah, standing right. Like, normally that's a big walk, yeah, people applauding. Yeah. It's like, oh, here I am. Nah, I'm yeah, here. But the other one is, there's a kind of story in the show that you guys would have seen about my mum taking me to see Billy Connolly.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm doing the big stage show, the whole kind of point of that is like, you know, I'm a 17-year-old kid, I'm from the farm, I go and see Billy Connolly, and, you know, I made a decision that night that's, you know, got me here today, and you're in some, you're at the Sydney Opera House, and yeah, whatever, yeah, and people are like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
And when you tell it to, you know, 40 people, they're like, I'm not sure you have made good choices.
Yeah, yeah. Hang on, don't blame this on Billy.
Yeah, exactly, mate. Billy would be selling more tickets yeah, than this, mate. Don't you bring Connolly into this. His good name down. All right, Tommy, Carl, this won't go out before tomorrow, so we can't plug that, but mm-hmm, plug the LA and New York ones one
yeah,
more time.
Yeah, cool. New York, Wednesday, August the 2nd at the Union Hall Theatre, and Saturday, August the 5th at the Lyric Hyperion in Los Angeles. And tickets and info, littledumdumclub.com.
And down the road a little bit, we are doing a live podcast at the Sydney Opera House at the same, basically, this, well, in the same Just for Laughs Sydney Festival as you.
Yeah, yeah. So the night before.
This festival here in Montreal, Just for Laughs, they do a Sydney, a shorter, just 1 week sort of thing where they bring out a bunch of, you know, kind of big acts and a whole bunch of things. And Little Dum Dum are doing a podcast there. We're doing two live TOEFOPs there. One sold out, but there's another show that's still on sale. So if you want to come along to that, that'd be really cool. And you guys are doing a Melbourne show before the end of the year as well.
Yeah, we're doing one more Melbourne show, October 21, yeah, I think it is. Yeah. And it's a big, if you're into a podcast, you'll know what this is. And even if not, you'll know who the names are. Fiona O'Loughlin and Lawrence Mooney are our two guests. Usually we just sort of don't announce who the guests are and just have it as a nice surprise, but they're sort of, you know, that pairing is probably our most popular pairing because they get pretty full on, and it's a very weird combo of being funny about some very dark subjects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
their episodes are, here's what I would say about them, they're probably the best in a lot of ways. They're the most honest, and like, it's where your show is at its best. This is how I describe your show to people who don't know about it. For years, there's always been comedians who wanted to make a show about, hey, what are comedians like, you know, behind the scenes? And yeah, so they'll do some show about, this is what comedians talk like when they're yeah, behind the yeah, scenes. That's not how you guys started out the podcast.
No.
But it's kind of what the podcast has become. It's sure, become this free space where people, like, people go on that podcast and say things you will never hear them say
no,
in other places, and talk about things in a way that you won't hear them. And Lawrence and Fiona, because both of them have, A, done so many, you know, things
yep,
that are interesting to talk about, but B, because they have a relationship that means that the two of them can talk about those things with each other, but also be loving and funny and yep, mean and all those sort of things. It lends itself and it leads itself to something quite amazing. I would say to people, if you've never listened to the podcast before, don't jump in on those episodes.
No.
Like, ease yourself yeah, into those.
Totally. Because they've educated us as well doing
yeah,
that. Like,
yeah,
like, there's been like four or five of those ones that have really sort of like been everyone's favourites. But the first episode we did was very heavy on the suicide yep, sort of yeah, subject. And we walked out of there going, well, we can't put this out. Like, you know, the audience reaction.
We had to put a content warning at the start, yeah, which we've never done before.
The audience reaction sort of taught us and educated us as to what we do well and what we can do in the future and that sort of yeah, stuff. But
well, it's probably worth saying to anyone who hasn't listened before to our show, if they're interested off the back of this, go listen to one with you, Will. You've been on like 10 plus times or something.
Yeah, so, well, so yeah, that, I mean, that's right. Yeah, there's plenty of
people want to jump in, that's probably a good place to start with one of those ones.
Yeah, that makes sense, I suppose. That's good, yeah.
Including nice one idea we did with you that we lost.
Oh, did we lose one as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
I mean,
we lost the first one, I think, we ever did with you.
Oh, that's right, we did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I remember at that time, this is a year in, and we managed to lose one with you and one with Sean McAuliffe. But we kept all the other fucking open mic people that we'd recorded episodes with.
Like nine Nick Kappers.
Yeah.
Fine, guys. Well, thank you very much for being on the podcast, guys, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.